The cinema specialist Phil and John are back, and today we are talking about Spider-Man No Way Home and Argyle. Spider-Man No Way Home, is this the third Spider-Man movie now that we've done in 2 weeks? Anybody who hasn't checked out last week's Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, or is it, how many Spider-Mans have we done? I feel like we've been talking about Spider-Man nonstop. We did Spider-Verse last week, Across the Spider-Verse, and I talked about Into the Spider-Verse. So if you haven't checked out that episode, you should definitely go check out that episode. I feel like that was one of our better ones, and it was actually fun to hear me talk positively about a superhero movie because I really enjoyed Across the Spider-Verse, which is funny because it's like one of our lesser viewed episodes at the moment. Maybe people don't want to hear me talk positively about these movies. Who knows? Anyway, John, hi, welcome back. Our 2024 is off to a piss poor start. That is all I'm going to say about that.
I just cannot win. We decided to watch this movie this week. When we decided to watch Argyle, I was like, hey, well, at least it's going to be better than Mean Girls. I didn't set the bar that high. And you know what? Somehow it didn't clear it.
You know, I knew this movie was going to be bad. The trailer was atrocious. You know, it was played all the time. Normally, whenever they put so much effort into P&A and things like that, you know that it's not going to be good. They're concerned that they need to convince people to watch it because they know the Rotten Tomatoes score, the IMDb score, the Letterboxd scores, all that stuff's going to be bad. I'm not really huge into Matthew Vaughn. I can be honest, I've never seen the Kingsman movies, so I don't even know really much about Matthew Vaughn. You know, so I'll just say that right off the bat. You see all these actors in it, and you assume, okay, like, it's at least going to be fun. It wasn't. It wasn't. And, like, that was the most disappointing part to me, was that it wasn't even just fun. It was so cringy throughout. It wasn't, you know, I talk about all the time how I love these action adventure movies and how, like, they need to make more of them. And, like, you know, this had a lot of elements of The Magnificent One, or Les Magnifiques. Les Magnifiques. Yeah, that's it. John, you should know French because Canada has French as a, you know, national language there.
I also, but, you know, taught it, but whatever. Not a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. So you can jump in there and you can help me out with that. But it had elements of that. And I talked about that movie briefly on one of my podcasts where I just really enjoyed that movie and thought that it was worth a watch. And it's kind of a similar element of, you know, spy things, and this guy's writing about it in his regular life, and it's Jean-Paul Belmondo who's best known for Breathless and everything like that. All that to say, it had elements of that. I don't think I laughed once. I really didn't laugh once. I didn't find the story to be all that creative or entertaining. It was trying so hard, and the best thing I could chalk it up to was this was a first draft of a script, and once again, this being on a streaming service ruins the movie. It makes it unwatchable because these streaming service type movies, and look, I loved Killers of the Flower Moon, and that is another movie that came out on Apple this year, but these streaming service type movies are such disasters sometimes, and this was one of the worst, man. This was a really bad movie, and I know it got theatrical release, but it's an Apple movie, and they are not editing these writers and these directors the way they need to. They're not. And we've seen it time and time again with Netflix, with Amazon Prime, with this. You need to rein people in at least somewhat. And it's been seen enough to know that it is the rule that people are going to make bad movies when the studio does not actually interfere at all. I know some directors, some writers out there are going to go, oh my God, Phil, you don't know what you're talking about. Yes, amazing directors making amazing movies is different. But these are good directors, sometimes great directors, in the case of Scorsese or Fincher when he did Mank or something like that. But they're making movies that these streaming services just want made as quickly as possible. They are more concerned about getting the name of the person onto their streaming service than anything else. Argyle is atrocious. Like, Argyle is a horrible, horrible movie. I actually liked one twist in it with the parents. I actually thought was fine.
Sure. Yeah.
And then I was like, maybe this is like a 2-star movie. The ice skating scene, the shootout with the smoke, it is all so cringeworthy. It's just a disaster of a movie. And I mean, there's probably going to be some people in here who enjoyed it. Good on you. You know, I'm glad that you were able to enjoy this movie. This was horrible.
It was a disaster through and through, and I kind of felt that way as soon as it started. I think actually one of the big problems about this movie is that the cast that wasn't the main cast of the movie was more interesting than the main cast of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, because you had Henry Cavill, you had John Cena. They seemed to have a camaraderie that really worked with each other in the, like, minimal scenes we saw them in together. But the entire movie is Bryce Dallas Howard and Sam Rockwell. And I love Sam Rockwell. We have talked about Sam Rockwell plenty of times on this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Never a complaint about Sam Rockwell. But this movie stunk so bad, even he couldn't do anything to elevate it.
Yeah, he was working with nothing.
Yeah.
He was working with absolutely nothing. And I mean, Bryce Dallas Howard, so I'm actually looking this up now. What is the best thing Bryce Dallas Howard has been in?
The Village?
50-50, I guess. She's a smaller role in that. I love 50-50. That's a great movie. But she's a very small role in that movie. I am confused as to why. Well, I guess I'm not confused.
No, you're not confused. You know exactly why.
Why does she keep getting roles? Why? Like,
nepotism? Like, that's just what it comes down to.
Yeah, like, because even when she did the Jurassic Park movies, like, she's fine in them. Like, the Jurassic World movies, like, she's fine. Mm-hmm. She's nothing great. She's nothing terrible. But there's never been a movie where I say, oh, man, I got to watch that because Bryce Dallas Howard's in it. No. And I think, you know, like, the rule is these studios or these streaming services need to edit people. The same can be said for Bryce Dallas Howard does not need to be a lead actress. She doesn't. Mm-hmm. She does not need to be a lead actress in anything. And it doesn't work in this movie. Her and Sam Rockwell have no chemistry. It doesn't work at all. The jokes fall flat. Henry Cavill is barely in this. Not very good when he even is. John Cena's barely in this. There's just too much going on. And none of it amounts to anything. And again, what really bothered me the most about this movie is how hard it was trying to be quirky and funny and how none of it landed. None of it was even remotely fun. This is the type of movie that should be so over the top that should just keep going and going and going and going. And you should be going, oh man, I'm laughing along with it because it knows it's making something ridiculous. And it's almost like it didn't know it was in on the joke. It forgot that it was supposed to be in on the joke. And yeah, it just doesn't work. It really does not work. And I am concerned that this is going to really impact these, like, writer director driven movies of like action movies like this. How much can you hear the air conditioning that just turned on? I'm in Kansas City right now. For anybody who's wondering, I'm not in my normal setup.
I cannot hear it at all.
Okay. I'm going to do the reduced background noise and hopefully that does it a little bit more too. But yeah, I'm not in my normal setup. I am sitting very uncomfortably in this chair right now that only goes up to about the middle of my back, but the things we do for the cinema specialists.
Yeah.
All right, John, keep going. Talk more.
I think what's most disappointing about this movie is Matthew Vaughn's other, like, film, the rest of his filmography in comparison to this, because this feels like a movie that he should be able to nail out of the park. Like, conceptually, mm-hmm. he should be able to nail it out of the park, right? We're looking at stuff like Kick-Ass. We're looking at stuff like even like his first two X-Men, the two X-Men movies he did, First Class and Days of Future Past. And again, like the Kingsman series, while not like fantastic spy films, they're fun spy films for the most part. And that should translate to this. Now, granted, he didn't write any of this. It was all, Jason Fuchs or whatever it is, mm-hmm. Who wrote this. And it just didn't have, like you said, it has no passion behind it. It just feels like it's so empty. It feels like, hey, I have this concept, but I'm not sure how to flush it out to make it entertaining, because we've seen movies like this before. We've seen these type of movies that center on a character, they're put out of place, they find out that they're actually in the right place, and things work, right? I think the best comparison to this movie for a recent release, did you ever see Bullet Train?
No, the Brad Pitt movie?
Yeah.
No.
That movie embraced every ridiculous aspect of it. So, mm-hmm. whereas this one doesn't. And like, that's the problem, is a movie like that acknowledges what it is. This movie seemed to refuse to acknowledge it's supposed to be this ridiculous parody of spy movies, essentially.
Yeah, and that was the problem, is it never really felt like it dove far enough into the parody part of this. It didn't know that it was clearly a parody. It was clearly a parody. But then it didn't push far enough to like be funny. It wasn't that funny. And that was my biggest complaint with the movie, is it wasn't funny. If you're going to make a parody, you have to go all in on the fact that you're making a parody. And unfortunately, this movie doesn't. And I'm curious what the general population thinks of this movie. Like right now, we don't have many viewers on this one. John and I, we've talked a lot about this, how a lot of times when we do these kinds of movies, we will get very limited interaction. Something like The Killer, when we did that podcast, that's our lowest viewed episode of this entire series. It's very far down because people just didn't go out of their way to see The Killer. So, you know, that is what it is. We're going to have that every now and then. Argyle was not a movie that I expected to do so poorly at the box office. Nobody went and saw this movie. I get we're in the dead time for film. This is that weird zone where they start re-releasing movies and everything like that. Argyle made $17.5 million and was a $200 million movie. It was the highest rated thing of this weekend, ahead of The Chosen Season 4, Episodes 1 through 3, which made $5.9 million, The Beekeeper, which made $5.3 million, Wonka, which made $4.7 million, and Migration, which made $4.2 million. There was nothing coming out. And it still only made $17.5 million. And the dailies right now are showing it making less than $1 million a day. This movie is a bona fide disaster. And there was nothing holding it back from being a success, except for that they cut a terrible trailer and they made a terrible movie.
It's when you look at this cast, look at how strong of a comedic cast they have for this movie. And then think about the fact that there was no comedy in this movie. I just don't understand. Like, it feels like all the parts are there for this movie to be successful, except for a script. And that should be the easiest thing to come by.
Well, and again, that's
where you get to the point where you're making this movie.
I think it was a first draft. I don't think it was rewritten a bunch. I think it needed to be written a couple times because it wasn't sharp. It was so lame. Joke after joke fell flat. Every moment fell flat. Even the more exciting, like, oh, this is what's going to happen in this train shootout. It felt so manufactured. It didn't feel fun. It didn't feel exciting. There's an interesting balance here. A movie like Nobody, which is a satire, parody, whatever you want to call it, that really leans into this John Wick everyday man kind of thing. That bus scene is one of the best film scenes, action scenes you're going to see in the last 10 years, including John Wick movies. It's so unbelievably well filmed. I loved Nobody. I think Nobody's a perfect movie. And this movie didn't understand that it wanted to go there. And so, you know, obviously we're harping on the negative. We're harping on the negative because there's really no positive. Why, though, do you think ultimately this movie didn't work? But I know you said the script, but like, why? How do you get Samuel Jackson? How do you get Bryce Dallas Howard? How do you get Sam Rockwell? How do you get Henry Cavill? How do you get Bryan Cranston? How do you get I'm forgetting Dua Lipa, like just insane casting. You get all those people. Did Apple just overpay like insane amounts and say, great, go make this movie?
Must have.
What's the return on investment?
I don't see how else it could have happened. I mean, there was a lot. I mean, even if we look at like the $200 million budget that this film was, a lot of it was CGI. A lot of it was very terrible CGI. But I guess the rest of it had to have been the cast. Like, it just had to have been. I don't understand how these people sign on to this movie otherwise. Or like, they were given literally just their parts in a script and they figured, oh, well, the rest of it must be better.
Yeah, I mean, imagine they're like actually holding out because, oh, this twist is so good. I just wonder, like, at this point, a company like Apple, we obviously know Apple makes billions of dollars every year. I mean, Apple is one of the most lucrative companies in the world. Are they doing movies like this as a tax write-off? is it just great throw $200 million into this and we're just doing it as a tax write-off because it was a disaster and actually it's not going to hurt us that much because we're just going to write it off and not have to do it? Like, this is the only explanation I can think of, because they were never going to make they. Now they have Killers of the Flower Moon, which is a $200 million budget that I think ultimately ended up making what, $60 million, if that? Mm-hmm. And now you have Argyle, which probably isn't going to cross $50 million. Are they just hoping to fail on these so that they don't have to pay as much in U.S. taxes?
Maybe. I don't know. I am not versed in U.S. taxes.
Nobody is. That's the beauty of U.S. taxes.
That's true. I don't know. Like, even when you think about it, this movie screams this was never supposed to have a theatrical release.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder...
This is like 2015 Netflix movie.
Yeah. And I wonder why it got one. Is it just because, like, there are too many big names attached to it that it had to have one?
Strikes.
Yeah, that's probably what it comes down to, right?
Yeah, I could see that strikes had a lot to do with this of, like, we need to put something in theaters. Great, let's get a theatrical on this.
Maybe that's Assuming also the reason name recognition like be enough
to carry it through.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know what the shooting schedule for this was, but what if they were shooting towards, like, the beginning of that writer's strike and they just couldn't have writers on set to fix things?
Yeah,
we saw that in 2007, right? Like, we saw that with Quantum of Solace, a James Bond movie where Daniel Craig had to rewrite on the set in order to make it so things made sense.
Yeah, I don't know, because I mean, this wasn't even close. Like, little minor rewrites weren't going to do it in this movie. That's for sure.
No, there were just so many weird decisions. And, like, let's go to the marketing aspect of it, which focused so much on this cat. Who was also like this
Captain
pivotal...
Marvel?
Well, maybe.
Is that you know what I'm saying? Though it's literally the
end. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
This is Captain Marvel.
Sure.
But go ahead. No, keep going with the cat. Keep going. Yeah. Cat's out of the bag. Like, all that.
But sitting in any movie theater for the last 4 months or whatever that we've been seeing this trailer, it's always the stupid cat. The cat is the center of this trailer. For some strange reason. Mm-hmm. This cat literally disappears halfway through the movie.
It does.
And it never does anything important in the movie. It's kind of like this symbolization, or like this symbol of the fact that, you know what? I mean, Phil, I know we try to avoid spoilers on these new releases. I'm not going to in this. There are too many twists for us not to talk about them here. It's like this way of showing that Ellie Conway's a different person than Rachel Kyle.
Yeah. R. Kyle.
That was the dumbest twist I have ever seen in a movie.
R. Kyle.
That might be the dumbest twist in a movie Bryce Dallas Howard has been in. And she was in Lady in the Water.
Yeah, that's saying a lot. That is saying a lot. All right. I want to talk about the trailer, though. I want to talk about this with the marketing. Hollywood has a serious problem right now with marketing. They are trying way too hard to go the ChatGPT, whatever that version is for trailers. That's what they're doing. Okay. They are putting everything through an algorithm, and they are creating dog shit trailers that are resulting in terrible box office performance. Mm-hmm. Go look at the movies that have been box office disasters this year. There are so many more than usual. These companies are putting hundreds of millions of dollars into these movies, and these movies are failing. Why? Because they're not going for a specific target audience. They're trying to get a little bit of everything, or they're shying away from what their movie actually is. Hint, hint, The Color Purple, not really acknowledging that it's a musical. Mean Girls, not really acknowledging that it's a musical. These movies are following some stupid formula that some person who runs an analytics department is saying, trust me, this is going to work. And guess what? It's not working. It's not working. This trailer was so bad, and it was the same trailer the entire time, and it wasn't performing well. This is no surprise to people that this movie was not a success. This was known. It was trending terribly. However, nobody went and fixed it. They didn't change it. And I don't know why that is. People need to make the changes. It's whatever is going on with these Hollywood trailers right now needs to stop. And it needs to be fixed. And it's the same thing I always say when I do my sports stuff, right? Because I do a lot of sports writing. Mm-hmm. That's my main gig here. And Will and I on the Phil and Will show will talk about sports and stuff. Everybody wants to say analytics, 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 analytics. Great. But analytics don't account for the circumstances a lot of the time. It might be better to go for it on 4th-and-2 and go for it instead of kicking the field goal. But if your quarterback is Sam Darnold or Zach Wilson, you're kicking the damn field goal. But it's not being accounted for as properly as it should be. And that is the same thing that is happening with movie trailers right now. Mm-hmm. Movie trailers are just not being cut properly. You used to sit down and you'd watch a movie trailer. And if you were the target audience for that movie, you knew exactly that you were the target audience for that movie. I knew Blue Valentine was going to be a top 30 movie for me before I even watched the movie, because that trailer was absolutely incredible. You go right down the line. Curious Case of Benjamin Button, the movie might not have been good, but the trailer was incredible. Mm-hmm. These movies used to have great trailers, and now they're trying to market to something else. Stop putting $200 million into terrible movies like this and focus your marketing. Do better. Like, this was just, it was a disaster from the start, and I'm so happy I don't have to ever see that trailer for the rest of my life, because it's one of the worst I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's another problem that we have with Hollywood right now, is we're getting the oversaturation of specific trailers. Mm-hmm. That's what I've noticed, right? Like, again, we have been going to the theater every week since July.
Yeah.
And we see the same trailers every single time. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no diversity in what we're seeing ever when we go sit down in a movie. And there should be. Because not every movie is for everyone.
Yeah.
So the trailers should target the audience of the film they are preceding.
Yep.
And instead, we watched Argyle trailers for 4 months. I can tell you, I never want to see this Bob Marley movie because of how many times I have seen the trailer for it.
Which, by the way, Sondra Oakley from Survivor Cook Islands is in it.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah, how interesting is that? But I totally agree with you. So I'm looking at this right now, and I'm just going back to look at R100. So we would watch new movies. We would watch, what was it? Poor Things. I got the Argyle trailer before Poor Things. Mm-hmm. Okay. I shouldn't be getting the Argyle trailer before Poor Things. There's no way. Godzilla Minus One, maybe. Because Godzilla Minus One at least is like a, you know, it makes sense.
Action movie? Yeah.
Action movie. Why am I seeing the Argyle trailer though before Oscar movies? There's no reason for it. And it was before everything. And I think that maybe there's just not as many movies coming out right now because of the writer's strike, because of the acting strike, all that. But Hollywood has a problem here, because no matter this trailer played every single movie for 2 months and it made $17.5 million. Yeah. With that cast and with Matthew Vaughn, made $17.5 million.
It shouldn't happen.
Music sequences in this movie were absolutely horrific.
Yes. Everything in this movie was absolutely horrific. I mean, I put it in my Letterboxd review. This is probably the first movie I have ever seen with zero redeeming qualities. Mm-hmm. Like, there was nothing that saved this movie.
Yeah. No, it's
bad. I know you like the twist with Bryan Cranston, which was kind of a what is going on moment. But I was so checked out of the movie by the time it happened that I was just like, are you kidding me?
Well, and also I liked it. And then 3 minutes later, I was like, okay, I'm over this. Like, this is stupid. Mm-hmm. I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, it gives you the what the hell is going on moment. And then it over explains the rest of the situation absolutely terribly. And it's just, I don't know. It's too much. And look, so John and I, once we get through Phase 4 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we're going to do in the month of March, since that's March Madness and people love brackets, we're going to come up with some brackets. We don't have these brackets designed yet, but we're going to be doing brackets that are going to be like each episode will be its own bracket. So like, for instance, the first episode could be like top 8 movies by female directors. And then we sit down and we talk about 8 movies by female directors. We go back and forth and we don't even have to come to a consensus on it, right? Like, we can just talk about it, but it'll get us talking about different movies, different types of stuff. And it's going to tie in a little bit more to the $5 Tuesdays and the best picture breakdowns and all that stuff that we're doing for the patrons, which if you're a patron, thank you so much. And, you know, if you're not, consider it patreon.com/thespecialist. But we're breaking away from doing like the Spider-Man or, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe and these new releases, because the new releases, it just isn't working. I mean, when we made the transition from our top 100 movies to the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I was like, John, let's do Marvel Cinematic Universe. I haven't seen them. This will be fun. Let's just jump in and do it. And the problem is, I think what I learned doing this is that the people who listen to us would rather listen to us talk about movies they've never seen than mm-hmm. listen to us talk about movies that they don't like.
Yeah.
And what's happening right now is we're going to the theaters to see the big release each week. They're bad movies, and our audience isn't watching them anyway. Why did I just waste my time going and seeing the movie Argylle? I don't know. So I could do this podcast, I guess. But guess what? It sucked. We all know it sucked. And you got like, I don't blame you. I know that I'm going to be talking to 25 people by the time we get to this point. Most people aren't going to make it this far. Maybe they're skipping just trying to find Spider-Man No Way Home. And it's like, hello, here's what I'm complaining about. It's just very frustrating. So in the month of March, we're going to be doing brackets. We're going to have four different brackets. I think it's going to be four. It should line up with four. We don't know what they are yet. But if you have an idea for what you want these brackets to be or something along those lines, let us know. Put it in the Discord if you're in the Discord. Leave it in the comments here. Let us know. Because at this point, we're going to be transitioning to a different type of series come April. And we already kind of have that outlined, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And it's going to be about good movies again. And I need to start talking about good movies again.
Yes.
When Oscar time comes, we can talk about new releases and good movies that are new releases and things like that. But after Argylle and Mean Girls, those are the only two movies from 2024 I've seen. They don't deserve the 54 cents that Regal gives them for me getting the movie through my Regal app, even though I have the Regal subscription. Those movies don't deserve it. They were so bad. I couldn't take them. And so I want to go back to watching things I care about. I want to go back to really bringing light to film that is underseen or that is underrepresented or that like you might have missed. Hidden gems. Movies that we can't believe you haven't seen, perchance, you know, like that is probably where we're going with this. Or even if you have seen them, it's just going to be a discussion of whenever you talk to your friends and like, I haven't seen that. And you go, you haven't seen that. That's pretty much what the name of our next series is going to be come April. So there you go. There's your little hint. And we have a good idea of how we want to do that. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we're really going to start diving into good movies again. Movies that John and I are really passionate about.
Yeah.
Because our top 100, I go back and I look at the reviews, right? Or, you know, our ratings and some of like our episodes where we're talking about random Russian movie number 7 and Whit Stillman are getting more views than when we talk about two Spider-Man movies.
Yeah,
that's crazy. But people are just tired of it. And I severely underestimated and I kind of appreciate that we went this route because I severely underestimated how much our audience really does just like film. And I appreciate that a lot. And that gets me excited for what's to come because we wanted to make sure we had something for after the top 100. We didn't know where we wanted to go. And we knew we needed to do something that was something we could fulfill. We probably should have stopped this podcast, this series, after phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But we kept going. We said, we'll do phase 4. And as we got into phase 4, I said, I'm not catching up because I'm done. And I think our audience is done. And I think they're tired of listening to me complain every week about Argylle and Mean Girls and movies of that ilk alongside a superhero movie like Eternals that I think is atrocious. So we're not going that route. Again, April's going to be totally different. As I said, maybe you haven't seen that, really. That could be where we're going. But in the month of March, we're looking to do some brackets. So if you have idea for brackets, if you have unique ideas, because that's the other thing, too. We could do, the best Robert De Niro performances. Okay, but we've talked about a lot of those movies and stuff like that. So give us some ideas of unique topics that you would like to see us talk about. Because we're at the point where we'll talk about anything. I'm not going to do documentaries. I'm not going to do short films. I'm not going to do that. But like, give me some ideas of what you want. Quintessential 80s movies. Quintessential 90s movies. Yeah. Best movies that are nonlinear. You know, let's get wild with this. And let's have some fun. And that's it. That's what we got. So I wanted to throw that in there. John, I know I just talked for 5 minutes, but are you good to move on to Spider-Man No Way Home?
I mean, I have nothing else to say about Argylle, so absolutely.
Cool.
Oh, actually, I forgot something. Because I didn't find this out until today, actually. Did you know there was a post-credit scene for this movie?
Yeah, and I didn't watch it.
I didn't either. I left as soon as I possibly could.
What was it? Do you know?
Apparently it was like a setup for Argyle taking place in the Kingsman universe.
Yeah, they're not going to do that.
No, no, they're not.
They're not going to do that. Here you go. Jason Obermeyer, an idea to discuss the pros and cons of Pixar, Disney, and DreamWorks.
Ooh.
That could be Ooh, fun. That could that be
an interesting one.
That's its own series right there, right? You take like, mm-hmm. you take, maybe you do like a 16 thing bracket and you take four Pixars, four Disneys, four DreamWorks, and then four miscellaneous. You just kind of talk about animation as its own. Just kind of throw that around.
That's a great thought, Jason.
I like that. John, write that down because like I said, I'm in Kansas City. I don't have any of my normal stuff. So this is on you. And everybody's hearing me tell John to write it down. So Jason, if we get to that point, you're like, what the hell? This never happened. You know who to point the finger at. And his name is John Millsip, spelled Mill and then Sip. All right, let's have some fun. I enjoyed Spider-Man No Way Home. I know that's not the popular opinion, maybe. I know that this is like a movie that is very polarizing. I really enjoyed this movie. I like the way it jumped around and put all the other characters in, you know, the from the different Spider-Man universes and things like that. I was really on board with all of that. I thought the twist that the villains were actually bad was a stupid twist, and that's ultimately why I gave it 3 stars. But this was a fun movie. And I think so many of these Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, especially once we got into Phase 4, stopped being fun. Yeah. And this movie was fun, and they were really leaning into it and really leaning into it hard. And they were leaning into what made Into the Spider-Verse work too. Like they were really mm-hmm. taking that. Maybe that's why people, I mean,
that's why they did this movie. That's why they made this movie, is because of the success of Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah. And they, and now Marvel wanted to actually get it instead of in association with Marvel, which is going to make them a hell of a lot less money. So I enjoyed this movie a lot. I thought it was a lot of fun. Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield. I love that they brought Willem Dafoe back. He's always great. Alfred Molina as Doc Ock is awesome. I even like that we got Thomas Hayden Church. Thank God he's back. Jamie Foxx, Reese Ifans, however you say his name. I love that we got all of this. I really, really enjoyed this movie. And yeah, I mean, I was into it from start to finish. I was into it. Even if I only gave it 3 stars, I just like it. I just enjoyed it. I wasn't mad. And I've been mad at a lot of movies we've been watching.
This is the third time I've seen this movie.
Okay.
And this is the time I've enjoyed it the most.
Good.
I've been really trying to evaluate why that is since I watched it. Because part of it, I was like, okay, when I first saw No Way Home, I marathoned all of the preceding Spider-Man movies into it.
Mm.
So all 7 Spider-Man movies that came beforehand that were relevant to this film, watched them all. And watching Sam Raimi Spider-Man kind of made me dislike these more. But I also said, like, on the rewatch of Far From Home, that I enjoyed it the most I've ever enjoyed that film. Mm-hmm. The second time I watched it, people were still really hyped on this movie. People loved this movie when it came out.
This is the highest grossing Marvel movie not named The Avengers, right?
I believe so, yeah. And a lot of it, there's, and what I couldn't take with this movie when it came out, there is so much fan service in this movie. And I'm not just talking, hey, here are a bunch of characters. We get into fan service of memes in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have the Spider-Man, the three Spider-Men pointing at each other meme. We have the I'm a bit of a scientist myself meme. Like, all of these memes that have erupted through Spider-Man, they felt they had to put in this movie. And that bugged me when I first saw it.
Get it, because Spider-Man bug. Okay, good. Keep going.
But this time, having watched a Marvel movie for the last week, for the last however many weeks we've been doing this at this point, wow, this is a breath of fresh air. It feels better.
Yeah, go ahead. Keep going. Sorry.
It feels so much better. I appreciate Tom Holland's Peter Parker so much more now than I ever have before. And one of my big complaints about this movie, because I looked at my original review for it, one of my big complaints was, hey, Tom Holland's Peter Parker finally gets character growth, but it's the same character growth we saw in the other Spider-Man movies. And that's what was missing from Tom Holland's Spider-Man, mm-hmm. was that character growth. And because, like, we've had Homecoming, we've had Far From Home, And Far From Home felt more like a Spider-Man movie, despite it not really diving into Spider-Man and being this like neighborhood superhero. This movie, this is the point where Peter Parker becomes Spider-Man.
Yeah.
In the MCU.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I really appreciated that too. And like it really, what it really showed was the differences between all the different Spider-Mans. Now, admittedly, yeah, I haven't seen The Amazing Spider-Man. And I do to watch that because I do like Andrew Garfield enough. But it really showed like the moodiness of the Tobey Maguire ones, and then whatever it was that makes the Andrew Garfield ones theirs. And then it gets into like the silliness of these Tom Holland ones. It really showed the different aspects of Spider-Man and how that worked. And I enjoyed the fact that like it gets into the quantum realm of everything and the multiverse and how that's what's splitting it up. And that's why it's a problem and all that. I appreciated all that. And my wife absolutely hates the ending of this movie where like it's, oh, they don't know who anybody is. I thought that was great because that's the type of thing that these movies were missing, which was the real heart and emotion, right, of Tom Holland. And this is just speaks to how great of an actor Tom Holland is. And I will say this, I've really grown a massive appreciation for Zendaya because I had never seen Zendaya in anything until Dune. And then I've watched her in some of these. And in this movie, I was like, man, her and Tom Holland have chemistry, which like obviously in real life, they have chemistry. Dating,
so that makes sense.
Yeah. So that makes sense. But I really, really appreciated what Zendaya was able to do with this. But that last moment when they're at the diner or whatever it is, the counter, the deli counter, and you get that like, hey, like you're going to remember, he doesn't read off the script. It's the best acting Tom Holland has done since The Impossible. It's the best acting he's done. And it was so well done. And I sat there and I said, man, this is a superhero in the MCU has actually gone through growth. How exciting is that? We have seen this character grow as an individual now to the point where he sacrificed himself and his friendships with these people so that they could live better lives. And then he's still taking kind of the high road once he gets to this point. That's great. I love that. And that was missing. That was authentic heart that was missing from really all the movies in the MCU up to this point.
It kind of takes us to a point in the MCU, which we haven't had because how Iron Man ended, where Iron Man ends with, I am Iron Man. And because of that, every hero in the MCU, their identity is known, right? We are finally at a point where we have a hero that nobody knows. And it feels more like a superhero because of it. That is literally so much about Spider-Man and like just superheroes in general is the importance of keeping your secret identity so the people you love and care about don't get hurt. And we are finally at a point where that can actually be a thing in the MCU. And it feels weird. It feels weird that we have so many movies after this that don't care about this again. But holy cow, it feels like a turning point or something that can be used as a turning point to make the MCU good again. Probably not.
Have we seen Tom Holland Spider-Man in any of the movies since this?
No.
Really?
No. Not at
That's
all.
Disappointing.
No mention of him. Yeah, I know.
That's disappointing. Yeah, that's disappointing because then we get Strange is next and we're going to be doing that one and that's Multiverse of Madness.
Yep.
That'll be and they don't even have one of his movies planned right now. What? Not until phase six.
Yeah. Yeah.
They don't even have one for phase six.
No. There's a lot of like rights issues with like Spider-Man and Sony still. And
yeah, Spider-Man's a pain in the ass with all that. Yeah.
But at this point, after this film, Peter Parker's the most interesting character in the MCU. I don't even think it's close.
By far, not even remotely close. By far. Yeah. No, I totally agree. He's the best character. And I said that from the first Spider-Man movie we watched. I was like, man, I love this version of Spider-Man. Like, I really do. It's this, that, whatever. But Tom Holland carries it for me. I talk about Tom Holland. Absolutely. Like, Tom Holland's a great actor. And he might not get necessarily the credit he deserves as good of an actor as he is because he did do the Spider-Man movies and stuff. But I don't know. I really don't. I'm disappointed to hear that he's not in future movies, at least not to this point. I guess that's why at this point, right, there's only three more movies that we're watching as part of this series.
Yep.
And then John and I did talk about, like, we will go back and we will eventually catch up on these. And maybe like after phase five ends, we'll sit down and we'll do phase five and all that. But with phase four, we're just going to do these next three. We're going to get rid of them. It's disappointing that it ends on that type of note. And then we lose that character for, you know, at least six movies because he wasn't in the Marvels. Yeah. Probably not going to be in Deadpool 3. And I maybe he's in Captain America Brave New World.
Doubtful.
Which doesn't come out until February 14th, 2025.
Yeah, I mean, we're finally at a point where Marvel movies aren't turning out every couple months anymore.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. Yeah. I believe I read earlier that Kevin Feige said they're going to focus only on their popular characters in the MCU now.
But so, they've killed them all.
I know. That's the problem. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens moving forward. But they've also introduced the multiverse. They can literally bring characters back from anywhere now.
Yeah.
Any version of them. Multiple versions of them.
They can make it very meaningless moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully they don't. But this movie, I think what really comes down to with this movie, and it picks up, I believe this is the first movie we have had that actually picks up immediately after a preceding film.
I'm right? trying to think, well, doesn't whatever the Thanos one is, like, where he's got Loki and Thor, doesn't that one technically take place immediately after?
That does technically place right after Ragnarok, you're right. But we don't see anything that happens immediately after. We are actually going from the last scene of a movie is the first scene of this movie.
Yeah, you get the J. Jonah Jameson, you know, he's the
villain. Which is fantastic. My God, having J.K. Simmons was one of the brightest comic book castings ever. And was just like the perfect casting for a role. And the fact that we finally got him, the fact that they've made him like InfoWars J. Jonah Jameson.
Yeah.
They updated him. It was really awkward when Far From Home came out. And they did that at the end because the Insomniac Spider-Man game for PS4 came out and did the same thing with the character. And a lot of people are like, oh, you're just copying this. It's like, well, actually, we wrote this at the same time. And, you know,
one was
this really is what started. Media is now. Crazy. Is that how the world works? But it's a great character. It's a great callback. But it also goes to show that these characters who are in multiple universes can be played by the same actor. It's like a little tiny thing that Marvel is just doing to make it easy to cast people in the future.
Also, though, like, and I've said this a lot, the J.K. Simmons casting as J. Jonah Jameson might be the, like, that's like a top 20 casting of all time. I'm not just talking like Marvel movies. I'm talking like anything ever. Yeah. He is that character. Like, that is like, if you watch the Spider-Man cartoons, if you read the comics, like all that stuff, like J.K. Simmons is that role. He is the only person who can play that role. Like, there is no other J. Jonah Jameson. Did they try to put a different J. Jonah Jameson in The Amazing Spider-Man?
No.
That's how good. Like, you have to think about that. Yeah. That's how good J.K. Simmons is in this role. There's nobody else who can play it.
Yeah. And, like, J. Jonah Jameson is a pivotal character in Spider-Man's everything. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole point is that he is that opposition to the idea that Spider-Man's a hero. He is the one who tests Spider-Man as a hero. And gives that foil to Spider-Man for him to build off of. Mm-hmm. Not having him in movies almost demeans Spider-Man as a character.
Yeah. What do you think about the fact that they use Doctor Strange as the person who bridges the gap in this movie? And like, did they have another choice?
No, I don't think so. I mean, first off, it's leading right into a Doctor Strange movie, so it makes sense that way. Mm-hmm. A Doctor Strange movie about the multiverse, so like it makes sense that way. This is the point where Marvel really made like the decision to focus on the multiverse, like cosmic and the quantum realm in all their movies. So like they kind of like classified everything three ways. This Doctor Strange made sense just as someone who Peter already knows. And I think that's the important thing. Yeah, they barely interacted with each other, but they know each other. And I think that's better than having some other character who we don't know, or like some random device that makes it happen or something like that. I think linking it in there, and I also think there is so much growth in the relationship between these two characters by the end of this film.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that the reason I asked this question was just because is Doctor Strange that popular of a character?
No.
Because he's almost taken over the Tony Stark role in these movies, it feels like, where he's the one who's bridging the gap between characters. So that's why I wanted to ask that, because yes, I agree with you. There is some growth between the characters, and like we get to see their relationship develop and everything. But that's where I was like, is there a better option than Doctor Strange? Because to me, Doctor Strange has never been all that interesting. And I don't feel like people walk around talking about Doctor Strange as if he's like one of the best characters in this universe.
No, I mean, he feels like a tertiary character most of the times, like secondary at best most of the time. Mm-hmm. Even I think in his like solo movie, like his first movie, he didn't really feel like that big of a main character.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I don't think he is like a well-beloved character. I think they got Benedict Cumberbatch, who's a good actor, to play the role. And there's kind of this convenience of, hey, he's always situated in New York because he's at the Sanctum Sanctorum. So a lot of anything based in New York can go through him. He has magical powers, which can just like deus ex machina some stuff every once in a while. And it was established that he can teleport literally anywhere. And that's convenient enough.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense why they did it. From a storytelling perspective, it's certainly one of the decisions that makes most sense from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was just something that I felt the need to bring up and ask and see what you thought. You know, because you were watching these movies actually as they came out. And obviously at this point now, No Way Home, end of 2021, you're talking 2 years ago. You know, you're really not talking even 3 years, even though it's 2024 and that was 2021. You're talking 2 years, 2 months. So it's hard for me sometimes to know who was popular, who wasn't, who were fans really attracted to, who were they not? Because when you have Spider-Man, for me, it's almost like, why do you need any of the other Marvel movie characters, big time superheroes in the movies? To me, you don't.
But
they put it in anyway. And I guess it makes sense with the movie. And that was the only way that you were going to be able to get the riff and all of that. Because you couldn't just copy into the Spider-Verse pretty much word for word. You had to do something a little bit different. So here we are.
I mean, they gave us an in-universe explanation for it. It works. The fact that he's no longer Sorcerer Supreme because he blipped out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a nice touch. I think it actually kind of motivates him to do this because like we're getting Cocky Strange, but we're getting Cocky Strange as I should be the head guy. I'm going to do this. And then he messes up.
Yeah. Yeah. Now in the next movie, is it directly impacted by this? And I know we're going to watch Multiverse of Madness next week. So like, you don't have to give me too many spoilers, but like, are his actions directly impacted by what he does with Spider-Man? Or is that going to be one of those things where Marvel just like throws out the window?
No, actually you're probably going to have no idea what's happening in that movie because you really need to see WandaVision to understand it.
Yeah. Well, guess what?
You're not watching WandaVision.
I'm not watching WandaVision. Yes, that is there's what is it? Death, taxes, and me not watching WandaVision. Those are the three guarantees in life. So I'm not watching WandaVision. Not going to happen. So I don't know. You know what? If I can't follow it, that's the movie's problem.
I think it's still pretty easy to follow. Even if you haven't seen WandaVision, there'll be some like small details that won't be big, but I think overall you'll get the idea.
Yeah, I would hope so. I doubt it's going to be so complicated I'm having a hard time following.
I mean, it is a movie that switched directors halfway through, but we can talk about that next week.
Damn. Okay, that's exciting. I'm excited. And this was like well post-COVID, so there's no reason that stuff like that should have been happening at that point.
Oh, it was a creative differences.
Gotta love creative differences when you're making multi-million dollar, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of movie.
Yep.
You as a director, you kind of just have to say, hey, I'm not the director of this movie, but that was Sam Raimi. So Sam Raimi started it and didn't finish?
Sam Raimi finished it. He was who was brought on afterwards.
Who started it?
Scott Derrickson.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but again, we'll talk about that next week when we're talking about that movie, because there are other things in this movie I really want to talk about. And I want to talk about the idea to bring back these characters, because one of the things that have been talked about for a long time during the Amazing Spider-Man, like the Andrew Garfield portion of Spider-Man, was this idea of a Sinister Six movie.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the closest we get to a Sinister Six, because we get six villains and it works out. And they did it the best way they could, not recasting these classic villains and instead just using the same actors. The fact that Willem Dafoe is absolutely spectacular in this movie.
I love Willem Dafoe, man. He's such a great Green Goblin.
He is. He is the perfect Norman Osborn. I really appreciate that they kind of like, they took the Green Goblin mask, which was heavily criticized when the first Spider-Man movie came out for a long time for looking really, really dumb. And they get rid of it early in this movie, and they just like have him have like the purple hood, and he actually looks like the Green Goblin from the comics because of it, without, you know, going green and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the weight he brings to this character and the fact that he can play this character so many different ways is so impressive, because Willem Dafoe just always brings it no matter what he's doing.
I agree. Yeah, and you know, after seeing him in a movie like Poor Things, which we talked about earlier in the series, and then you see him in this, you really realize, like, Willem Dafoe, he's just always on. And, you know, I know he's never won an Oscar, and he's never going to at this point. You know, he's pretty much past his time. The Florida Project was his chance.
Mm-hmm.
He's so on all the time, and he just knows how to play crazy, but he knows how to play it subdued. He knows how to be realistic. He knows how to make his little turns here and there, his little moments. He just does it all so damn well. And that's just, he's just so much fun to watch. So yeah, I mean, Willem Dafoe in this is great. Alfred Molina as Doc Ock. I really haven't seen the second Spider-Man in such a long time that I kind of forget what the story is behind how Doc Ock becomes Doc Ock. So I would like to go back and rewatch that a little bit to see like why they chose to make him the kind of like the good villain. He's the one most willing to change and wants to change and stuff like that. So I do think I need to rewatch Spider-Man 2 just to get an idea of that. But watching
it all makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it brought me back
to the characterization from Spider-Man 2.
Well, that's good, because it really brought me back to like the fun of like those Sam Raimi early movies, playing the video games, doing all that stuff. I just really, really enjoyed that. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm happy with this movie. I liked No Way Home. It's not my favorite. Is it my favorite of these? Let me check. I have to check. I ranked it. I actually did put it as my fifth favorite of the 27 MCU movies we've watched.
Fifth? Wow.
Which,
where did I put it?
Does make it my favorite of the Spider-Man movies. It does make it my favorite of the Spider-Mans. I have it above.
I also put it as my favorite. It's sitting right above Far From Home.
I gave Far From Home and Homecoming both 2.5 stars. I gave this one 3. So I have Captain America First Avenger, Captain America Winter Soldier, Guardians 2, Captain America Civil War, Spider-Man No Way Home, and then Guardians 1.
Okay. Yeah.
That's my
very specific series within the MCU.
I do. And I'm going to be honest with you, if I went back and watched the Spider-Man movies again, I'd probably like them more. It seems like Captain America, Spider-Man, and Guardians is where I'm going.
Yep, I think it makes sense. I just like it. I'm going to circle back to this character stuff, because a lot of our critiques for some of the earlier Spider-Mans is that we had these side characters and they were there, but they didn't really build characters. This is the first time I felt like we really got a character for MJ in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, like you really grow to appreciate Zendaya while you watch this film and what she can do as an actor. She's phenomenal, in all honesty. Like, I haven't seen Euphoria yet. I know she's raved about in that show. But it's these little moments that she can bring to a scene where it's that panic she brings when she's really worried about Peter, but also that like carefree attitude she tries to put off at the same time. She just handles all of these different emotions so well that someone much more experienced than her wouldn't be able to do.
Yeah. I will say Challenger still looks terrible.
No, I'm hyped for that movie.
Yeah, I know you are. I think it looks absolutely horrible.
That's fine.
But yeah, I mean, I haven't really seen her in anything other than this. So, and you know, what the 3.5 seconds that she's in the first Dune.
Yeah.
But she's obviously going to be a massive part of Dune too. So I am excited for that, which we'll be doing that movie. That'll be probably the last one we do, actually.
Probably the last new release we do.
What are we going to do next week?
I don't know. There's one movie released this week. It is the new Diablo Cody movie.
Yeah, we're not doing that.
No.
That's going to be bad. That's going to make no money. That's going to be Argyle and Mean Girls all over again. Is there something we missed that we could do?
I mean, we could go back to The Boy and the Heron. We never talked about that. It's nominated for Best Animated Picture.
Let me see if that's streaming anywhere.
Oh, that's the other big question. I forgot about that.
Yeah, I got to actually be able to find it. It's the biggest issue. Because it's not playing in theaters near me. Let me see.
What else have we missed?
I don't know. Oh, I can't.
We've been watching so many of these movies.
$20 to pre-order it. I still can't even get it yet. Nice. So yeah.
Yeah, so we're not doing that. What's been released on streaming lately?
You never know, because if you don't look at it the first week, it's gone forever.
I know. If we believe that our audience prefers us listening, talking about more obscure and like films we enjoy, do we just do this J.A. Bayona film on Netflix that was nominated for Best International Film?
Yeah, what's it called? Society in Snow?
Society in Snow.
I mean, I love J.A. Bayona. I know that that's not going to be a lot of people have seen, but I'm down. I mean, I love J.A. Bayona.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's just do that then. All right, so we'll do the Society in the Snow. Jason Obermeyer, do you think superhero movies will go the way of the Western films, how they were so popular in the 50s and 60s and died out during the 70s? I think 100%.
I think
we're already seeing it. I mean, these movies are starting to become problematic. And honestly, audiences, for as much as people like to be like, oh, like audiences are getting dumber, or all they care about is TikTok and this, I think audiences are actually getting smarter and audiences are getting more demanding. And I actually could see a change to like what happened in the 90s, where the 70s were amazing and the 80s were really down. They had a couple great movies, but for the most part, they were down. And then all of a sudden, the 90s, it was like this resurgence, this renaissance of just great film. And I feel like, and they were blockbuster movies in the 90s that were great movies. Now, granted, in the 80s, you had Back to the Future. You know, we talked about The Karate Kid on our Patreon and all that. But like in the 90s, you're talking like Forrest Gump, Shawshank Redemption, and Pulp Fiction all in the same year, and The Lion King. Like these are big movies. Like they're huge movies. So, yeah, I think Jason says 2025 is the make or break year with the start of DCU and MCU back to three films. Yeah, I think we're going to start to see it fall off. I think people will be excited to watch them. I still think, look, in the summer, in August, in July,
that's when they should come out.
You got nothing to do. You want to throw them on? Sure, go throw them on. People are going to go watch them. However, like these, like, oh, we're going to put it out in February. We're going to put it out in December. I think people are over it. I really do. I think they're just done with it. Yeah. I don't think they care anymore. And so I think they have to be a little bit pickier. And I think you're going to see a little bit of a decrease because people want these to be good now. And Marvel got away with a long time not making very good movies, or not really caring if they turned out good. And I think that is changed now permanently.
I agree. Yeah, they are witnessing the repercussions of their actions, and it's finally caught up with them. And they have to make an actual concerted effort to decide how they are going to do this moving forward. If they want to keep making dividends off of these rights they have purchased, they have to know how to do it. They self-corrected with Star Wars pretty quickly after they realized they couldn't be pumping out Star Wars movies all the time. It took them a long time to get there with the MCU. If we are at a point where they are releasing one or two movies again as summer blockbusters, when these type of movies should be released, they could be fun popcorn flicks again.
Yeah. Which is what they should be going for. And for some reason, they just went away from it because they got kind of greedy in COVID. I know COVID threw off the pattern and everything, but like you're talking last year, it was February 17th, May 5th, and November 10th. This year, the only one coming out is July 26th.
Yeah, it's huge.
That's how it should be. Yep. Yeah, and then next year they're going to do Brave New World on February 15th. So maybe they're seeing something on that Valentine's Day weekend, and then they have Fantastic Four in May. They have Thunderbolts in July, and they have Blade in November. It's too many movies. don't be surprised if you start seeing some of that stuff get moved around.
Why would you release Blade in November instead of October?
I don't know.
Short-sighted. People always underestimate the Halloween crowd.
Yeah, I know. Last one, Jason Obermeyer. I know you criticize MCU CGI. Have you heard of ILM Stagecraft? There's a way of having a digital background for the performers. Think it's an option for good CGI. I've actually never heard of it, so I don't know.
Either way, I'll have to look into it.
We'll have to look into that. But all right, everybody. So that's what we're going to be doing next week, Society in the Snow. And we're moving on to the next movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is, I know I've said it like 12
Doctor
times.
Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
We'll be talking about that. Also, if you want to be a patron, patreon.com/specialist. $5 patrons are getting our $5 Tuesdays, which have been a lot of fun. Next week's going to be When Harry Met Sally. And our $10 patrons, in addition to everything in the $5 tier, are also getting our best picture breakdowns, which we're doing for the entire month of February. So if you want to become a patron, this is really the month to do it. $10 and you get those 10 episodes plus the four that we're putting out for $5 Tuesdays. And then if you like it, you keep going, up to you. If you're a Survivor fan too, there's so much Survivor content. There's so much content we've been putting out. Like, we're going to have over an episode a day for the month of February on this. And like, you're not going to get that at any other Patreon. I guarantee it. Where's the Men's Warehouse guy? I guarantee it. You're just not going to get it. So consider becoming a patron. Otherwise, thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.